So I'm here with
Lindsay
on the Jamestown Scotland Ferry. And when
you have a hankering for that cup of coffee and you're staring at the Jamestown settlement,
then you know it's
mocha latte time.
Exciting show coming up this week. We have an interview with Jeff, one of the co-founders and coffee guru at PT's Coffee in Topeka, Kansas, as well as playing catch-up on where Circus Boy has been since the last episode, and also up-and-coming events with interviews, cities, and products coming up in these next weeks, and of course, a hit from Mod Dog. Hello and welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. This is your host, Circus Boy Nathan, coming to you from the Flying Dutchman RV. This is my podcast where, well, not every week, as much as I can, I bring you just cool things about coffee and interviews and all kinds of things on the circus. And that's right, circus. The circus is my day job. But I have a passion for coffee, and this week you are in for a treat. Now, I have to first say, it's been a while since I put a podcast up. I know. And you're probably saying, you know, Nathan, where have you been? You've been leaving us hanging with only whatever episodes. The last episode I did, in case you are listening to this one, is the first episode you've ever heard of Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World. Last episode was with the Duckmaster of the Peabody Little Rock there in Arkansas. And if you didn't listen to it, go back and listen to it because it's a really good, it was a lot of fun with Lloyd Withrow. I got it right, see? I remember, see? I mess things up, you know, once, maybe twice, but then never again. I have a memory like an elephant. And elephants really do have good memories. So, anyways, I'm already wandering off topic. So, I'm sitting here on a chilly night in Wichita, Kansas, and I'm in the Flying Dutchman on the circus lot, and I'm sitting here talking to you, of course, and it's good to be back. I've missed doing the podcast, but like I said, I've been very busy. But before I go on, I've pulled a double shot of espresso here, better known as a doppio in espresso circles. And I'm going to take a sip because there's nothing better than drinking coffee. I hope you're drinking coffee or espresso or something at least caffeinated. There's nothing better than drinking coffee or espresso while talking about coffee and espresso. So humor me a moment while I... That's nice. It's decent. I'll talk about the espresso later. So, anyways, to get back to where have you been, Nathan, Circus Boy Nathan, you know, what have I been up to? Well, contrary to the popular belief and, you know, reports in The Onion and the National Enquirer, I have not been abducted by aliens, and I did not get run over by an elephant. I did not jump off the face of the earth or, you know, go to work for the CIA. None of that stuff's true. I don't listen to any of that other whatever. But where have I been? Well, last time, I've been busy. And then there's been a lot of things that have happened here on the circus and in my life. Things breaking down and siblings getting married and such. So to give you a brief run through, and I'll make this as quick as possible. This will be like the hyper-caffeinated version. Last time I talked to you was in Arkansas, right? And I've been to about 13 towns since that point, 13 cities. So we went from Arkansas to Duluth, Georgia, and then we went from Duluth, Georgia over to Prescott Valley, Arizona, and I stopped in Tulsa for a week because my RV also needed to be fixed. The Flying Dutchman was limping and had a broken wing, so I had to fix that. on the Flying Dutchman. So it was in Prescott, Tulsa, Prescott Valley, Arizona. And when I was in Prescott Valley, took a day trip up to Grand Canyon, took a day trip down to Phoenix, and that took a couple days to go over to LA. And LA was amazing. And I'll talk about that on another podcast, my 3 days in LA. And then from there, we went up to Loveland, Colorado. And then from there, up to Spokane, Washington. Then I flew like back to the East Coast for my little sister's wedding. For like 36 hours I was there, I think, and then flew back to the West Coast to Spokane. Then spent 3 days in Seattle. Then we played Kennewick, Washington. Then we played Nampa, Idaho. Then we played Salt Lake City. Nampa, Idaho, drove through Salt Lake City, Utah. Spent a day there. Spent a day or two in Denver, Colorado. Then played Sioux City, Iowa, and then Topeka, Kansas last week, and now we're here at Wichita, Kansas. So, yeah, I've been traveling around a bit. So, a lot of traveling. And another thing that happened is my bike died. That's right, the motorcycle. I was coming back when I went to LA. I was coming back. And about 1 hour away from Prescott Valley, Arizona, in the middle of a desert, in the middle of nowhere, literally, the bike, it just, something went on. I felt it go, like, it snapped or something. And it was a big ordeal, and I'll spare you the details of how I made it to work on time, because I had to play a show that day, and I was really, really worried about missing the show. But one of the guys in the circus band saved my butt, and I owe him big time, so thanks, Steve. so the bike died, and it turns out once I got it up to the shop in Loveland, where it still is, unfortunately, I've been without it for over a month now, which has been driving me crazy, because when your only wheels you have are your RV and your motorcycle, and I use that motorcycle for everything, not just, you know, coffee journeys and coffee research, but... Also, you know, to go to the store for laundry. I mean, I ride that bike in all kinds of weather. That's my wheels. So I've been without it for about a month. And it turns out that one of the belts on the side, if you know anything about motorcycles, especially the Ducatis, they have two cylinders, desmodromic, which means that the heads go up and down, and they have the valves at the top of the head. And apparently there's no spring in there, which makes it the desmodromic. Anyways, I won't talk about the finer points of Italian motorcycles. But anyways, the belt broke, which meant that the head, therefore, had just slammed, was running loose in the cylinder and slammed into the valves. So major breakdown, major surgery on the bike, and I still haven't gotten it back yet, but fortunately warranty is going to cover that. So Ducati, at least they stand behind their machines, so that's good to know for all you people that ever thought about getting one. So the bike died. I still don't have that back yet. Then not too much later, my computer died, which is, my computer is what I record everything on, to my interviews. Basically my hard drive died, and that's something I do not wish upon anyone. Lesson learned, back up your information. If you have a computer or electronic device and any kind of information that you care about or would feel really sad losing, back it up. Because it really stinks when you lose it. I know. So my computer died. So got that fixed. And then my phone died just this week. And so... yeah, all my technology is failing around me, so maybe it's the bumps of the road, I don't know. But, so the phone died, so I have a nice brand new spanking, sparkling phone. It has a really nice camera in it, so I'm hoping a lot of my pictures from my catalog and coffee shops I go to will be better quality from here on out. So, in a nutshell, that was... Since the last podcast, that's what's happened. And also, I almost forgot to mention, one of the biggest things for this podcast and Circus Coffee in general is I officially started Circus Coffee. Now you're probably saying, Nathan, what is Circus Coffee? Well, Circus Coffee is, as far as I know, the first ever coffee shop or coffee cart or coffee RV in my case, on a circus. And what I've basically done is I've opened my RV up to as an espresso shop for other people on the unit. So I have a full menu of espresso based drinks and French pressed coffee. And I usually have something new every week as far as the beans I'm using for espresso or for the brewed French pressed coffee. And it's usually local and as high quality as I can find. And so I do everything, lattes, cappuccinos, americanos, macchiatos, and even came up with, I'm working on some recipes from scratch, and I developed a pumpkin pie circus latte, which, original menu that I came up with, did some experimentation, and it has real pumpkin in it, and it's been a hit. And you can see the circus coffee, which is my RV, I serve out of my kitchen window, basically. But, you know, I make it nice. I put a chair out there and always has some music, you know, playing. And this week I got a pumpkin out there for the season. And it's been really big hit. Napa, Idaho was the first week. And so I'm on week 4 now of circus coffee. And I have to say that doing the coffee thing from this perspective of actually being a barista and creating drinks and worried about quality and people actually paying money for what you're creating, I'm starting to learn, what people, I guess, in all the cafes that I visit, what they feel, the pros and cons. I've tried to put a lot of my education, I guess, or learning that I've done, like, I'm up to probably, I think, around 430 cafes that I've visited now. And every time I go to those cafes, besides ordering a mocha latte, I also write down pros and cons for myself, for my own reference in the future, whatever. And, so I have probably, I'd say, over maybe 100, 150, just little tidbits of, I like this, I want to remember this in the future. I mean, everything from, don't have flies in your cafe to, really, I saw one place that used, I think it was coffee beans in the cement. I don't know how they did it, if they lacquered the coffee beans or whatever, but on the step where you walk in the cafe, embedded in the cement was coffee beans, and I thought, that's really, really cool, so just little stuff like that. Anyway, so I've been incorporating that into circus coffee, so it's been really popular on the unit, and everyone from, the Bulgarians to, I don't know, the lady who rides the elephant, they've loved it, and it's been great for me because been getting better each week. And if you want to see pictures, you're probably saying, Nathan, what the heck does this look like? Well, if you go to the best www.bestmochalatte.podomatic.com, which is, if you just Google best mocha latte, the website will come right up. And if you go on there, that's the webpage for this podcast. And on the right-hand side is a little Flickr badge that you can click on. And I have a photo gallery over there at Flickr. And there is literally probably over 100, maybe 150 pictures over there. And you'll see the gallery listed Circus Coffee, and just go in there and check it out. And you can even leave a comment if you want to. You can. I think there's even, I put new pictures up today. One of the people that came was snapping pictures as she was ordering coffee. she sent me some of those, and I put them up there. So yeah, good stuff. Now on to the interview for this podcast. You guys are in for a huge treat. Last week when I was in Topeka, Kansas, there's a place there called PT's Coffee. Now I've been following PT's for some time now. And just following, on forums, what people say about them, what they're doing with coffee. I saw that I was coming to Topeka, and I emailed Jeff, and Jeff is one of the two founders of PT's. It was Jeff and Fred that founded PT's Coffee, and Jeff's a really super cool person. He, just to give you a little background, he'll tell you about his background, but his credentials in coffee, I have to tell you, are astounding. There's a World Barista Championship every year, as I mentioned last podcast, and he's been a taste judge for one of those championships. So I mean, that's, and plus he is on the board of directors, I believe it is, for the SCAA. And if you don't know what that is, you'll find out in a few minutes. So yeah, really good stuff. So without further ado, I'm gonna go straight into the interview. Lots of really good coffee info, and then come back and wrap it up for this week. So I am here at PT's Coffee with Jeff, and welcome to Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World.
Thanks, man. It's great to be here.
And so we're at Jeff, and he is one of the co-founders of PT's Coffee. Just first, for everyone listening, just to give a little bit of background about yourself and then about PT's Coffee.
Okay, well, I'll try and be quick. I'm basically a journalist by trait. That's what I grew up wanting to do from the time I was in high school, and I shot photographs for years, for probably 15 years. I've photographed presidents. I've photographed World Series. Mm-hmm. I've climbed mountains. I did a 10th anniversary on Mount St. Helens volcano. Mm-hmm. So I've done stories all over the United States, working for newspapers. Mm-hmm. And I moved back to Topeka after I won a lot of awards one year to be closer to my family. And my mom was getting up there in age, and I wanted to be closer to home. And when I moved here, there were no coffee shops. Mm-hmm. So I opened one. Seemed like a sensible thing to do. So,
yeah. And I guess it's been a pretty wild ride. Oh, great! We have a latte coming here. Thanks. What's your name again?
Robin.
Robin. Okay, we may be talking with him in a minute, but that's his introduction for today. So,
Robin is the Midwest Regional Barista Champion.
Excellent. Okay. So we'll have lots to talk about with him. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. Great. So you guys started back in 1993, I believe.
Yeah.
And I guess it's just kind of grown ever since.
We started in 1993. And like I said, I was actually a photojournalist. And I started the coffee shop basically on a whim, because there wasn't any coffee in Topeka, any good coffee. And I'm a coffee snob, and I'm proud to say it. But there wasn't any good coffee in this town. And I decided I wanted good coffee. So I had a little bit of spare time, and my roommate at the time used to manage a Schlotzky's. He was a restaurant manager, basically a fast food restaurant manager.
Right.
And I thought to myself, well, if I open a little coffee shop, I can get him to run it. I won't have to do anything. Mm-hmm. I can still keep my job, and he'll run the coffee shop, and I'll have good coffee and make a little extra money.
Uh-huh.
Little did I know that, 15 years later, I'd be fully immersed in it and be out of the journalism business altogether. So That's basically how we got started, on kind of a whim. And we opened the first coffee house, and it went gangbusters right from the start. So less than 12 months later, we already had plans to open our second one.
Mm-hmm.
And it went gangbusters right from the start.
Mm-hmm.
So within 24 months, we had two cafes open and going really well. And it was taking more and more of my time every day. And I was starting to get a little heat at my full-time job as a journalist, because I was spending so much time on the coffee shops.
Mm-hmm.
And one day in 1997, I said, you know what? I'd rather do the coffee than I would do the journalism. So I quit. Mm-hmm. Much to my boss's surprise. He had no idea it was coming and was completely shocked. He thought I was crazy to give up a career in journalism to go work at a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always had big dreams. And at that point, we knew we also wanted to get into roasting our own coffee. So in 1997, we started roasting our own coffee. Or 96, we started roasting our own coffee.
Huh.
And now we sell coffee all over the United States, and primarily over the internet. We sell a lot of coffee on the internet, on our website.
Huh. Which is?
Oh, well, now that you ask, you can see it as www.ptscoffee.com. That's okay. PT's Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
com.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good info on there, not just about, I mean, obviously you sell coffee on there, but you talk a little bit about kind of beyond just, you know, coffee is great and we all like it, and, you know, and it's, you know, a big part of our lives, but you also talk about Cup of Excellence and Trips to Origin and a couple other things like that. When I mentioned trips to Origin, for those of you listening, I'm talking about actually taking, physically going to the country or the farm where the farmers live and interacting with them. And we're actually looking at the website here. As he just opened his laptop.
I'm something else and, here.
Okay.
That's okay. Go ahead.
So actually take trips to Origin and meet the farmers one-on-one. So it's not... because could you briefly explain the traditional way of buying coffee up till, I would say, probably maybe the past 5 or 6 years through brokers and all that, and then kind of what you guys and a couple other small specialty roasters are doing around the United States as far as going directly to origin?
Well, there's probably close to a dozen of us that actually travel the globe, and we actually go buy coffee. We meet with farmers. And basically... Prior to 5 or 6, 7 years ago, almost all coffee was bought through an importer, brokers basically, who would, it was a trade. I mean, it was it basically they bought and sold and they cashed in the middle on the differential. Mm-hmm. I was just putting together a little slide presentation on coffee roasting and trips to origin.
Oh, great.
And what is origin. So I will show that while I'm talking to you here.
Okay.
So basically the thing I didn't like about that is I really felt like I couldn't control what was going on with the coffee. Mm-hmm. I would oftentimes struggle to find the coffee I wanted because I got a discriminating palate and I get really cranky when I don't find the coffee I like. So I made the commitment back in 2000 that I was going to go to origin. I was going to meet some farmers and work through networking just to find the farmers that really cared. I was looking, I was looking for farmers, small farmers in Central and South America, Africa, Indonesia, in that tropical sphere around the world where coffee is produced. But I was looking for the farmers that cared as much as I did. I wasn't looking for the farmer that was just interested in growing more volume so he could make more money. I was interested in the farmer that actually loved coffee and his crop was like a child to him, that cared that much. You know, there was a passion.
Yeah.
And so that is now basically what my quest is. When I go to Origin, and I'm going to Guatemala in 2 weeks, I go meet with farmers, I meet with co-ops, I meet with individual farmers, estate owners. I've met with some of the wealthiest farm people I've ever met in my life who are coffee farmers. They also happen to have other businesses on the side. But I've also met with extremely poor coffee farmers, which is more the norm, who actually operate on like 5 acres of land and all their coffee is grown on the side of a mountain and they pick it all by themselves and, you know, do all the work themselves.
Yeah.
So I've kind of covered the gamut, but the reason I go to Origin, I try to work with them directly is when you work with a producer directly, you really know what they need and you know how you can help them. And it's not always just give me an extra nickel.
Right.
You know, sometimes by talking to them, you find out that what they really need is water. In Africa, for instance, they actually need wells dug, you know, and so you can actually do some projects. We're working on a project in Rwanda where we actually pay a little bit extra so that it helps get water to a mill, Boof Cafe. It actually helps get water to the mill for processing of the coffee. It's just so important. There's so many different issues. We're getting ready to work on another project in Tanzania that Allegro Coffee has actually started, and we're joining in this year and going forward, where there's Tanzania farmers and they're located right next to where the Jane Goodall projects used to are with the chimpanzees and the gorillas. And what's happened is the coffee farmers there, they can't find water to wet process their coffee. So for years, they've dry processed their coffee.
Right.
Dry processing obviously means they pick the coffee from the tree and they throw the cherry, the ripe cherry fruit or the overripe cherry fruit. They just throw it on the ground and allow the cherry to rot on the ground. And then they dry harvest the seeds from the cherry without any water. And the problem with that style of processing is done often, and oftentimes it's used for espresso. It creates a lot of sweetness in coffee, but it's like gambling, because when you allow a fruit to rot on the outside of a bean, you really don't know what kind of a flavor is going to come out of that bean, at that point. So it's a real risk.
Yeah.
And what the Tanzania farmers were finding was they were getting an extremely low price for their product because of that. Yeah. And so Sustainable Harvest, working with Allegro, has gotten a grant, and they're going over there, and they're finding some equipment that uses very little water to process coffee, but yet does process it when the fruit's ripe and gets a nice clean cup of coffee.
Huh.
As a result, they're able to improve the flavor of the coffee,
and
thereby getting a much higher price for their coffee, which helps the farmers.
Yeah.
Now, if I could back up just a little bit on that project, the reason this project is so important, I mentioned that these farmers were located very near to where the Jane Goodall project was.
Right.
She's been working for years with the chimpanzees. The problem is the farmers were having so much struggles to get a good value for their crops that they were almost ready to abandon their trees, their coffee trees. They were going to cut them all down, rip them all out, and they were going to plant corn. If they would have planted corn in these areas, the chimpanzees would have come out of their area to get the corn, which would have put the chimpanzees and the humans into direct conflict.
Yeah.
And we know who's going to lose that battle.
Right.
So that it's very important that we keep these farmers, one, growing coffee, two, growing great coffee and earning a good price for their product so that they can also help themselves get more water, get more clothing, get more education. It's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah.
So it's a great project Sustainable Harvest is working on. I'm looking forward to working with them in the next couple of years. So.
Yeah.
That's excellent. Now, as he's talking here, he's flipping through some of his pictures. And of course, they're all amazing because he's a photojournalist. but they're really one thing that's really jumping out to me is the faces of these people, because these are the people that I'm just here picturing. You guys see pictures of you, Jeff, here at Origin, and these are, the everyday lives that, as you and your job get to affect their lives by what we consume on a daily basis in our lives. And it's really neat to, I guess, kind of almost have that peace of mind in a way, coffee is a great thing and we all enjoy it. Now, we can enjoy it without having to worry about, if someone is... being ripped, ripped off half a world away, type of thing. So
that's exactly right. I mean, this industry is all about people, and I love coffee, and I love great coffee. There's nothing better. Mm-hmm. But the fact that I get to work with people like this little girl right here in Ethiopia, her name's Tablet. Mm-hmm. I mean, things like that, it just makes your heart warm. You're just so happy to be doing what you're doing, and you want to do more. So anytime I can help the farmer get a better price for their product, and I'm willing to pay it.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. Yeah. It's got to be a win-win, though. The farmer's got to be doing it for the right reasons. Taking care of his family, taking care of his community, doing all the right things as well. This isn't charity.
Right.
So, but it is a win for everybody when we do a sustainable product that helps, that's good for the environment, and it's profitable for all parties. That's a win all the way through.
Yeah. From what I understand, in the history of coffee, since it's become such a valued commodity, this is really a first, I guess, as far as business ethics, really, with coffee, right?
I think it's got to be. It's really interesting. I battled myself with this because my company's been open for 15 years.
Right.
And like I said, 7 years ago, when we started thinking we were going to go to Origin, I had real conflict in my head about the fact that I'm choosing to want to go pay these farmers more, when if I don't, I can conceivably make more money here.
Right.
And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Why am I going to voluntarily go give them more money? But yet, the more I get into it, I can't do it any other way.
Yeah.
There is only one way to do it, and that is pay the farmers everything they're due for what they're doing.
Yeah.
Shortchanging them is extremely short-sighted.
Huh.
It's bad for the environment. It's bad for people. It's bad for relationships.
Right.
And so I'm 100% behind sustainability and transparency, more importantly.
Yeah.
So.
Now where does this new kind of concept with coffee fit in with specialty coffee? Well, I should say we should back up. Could you define what specialty coffee is? Because you're directly associated with the organization that is, the name of specialty coffee, I guess.
I'm not sure if I actually know the exact definition of specialty coffee, because there's quite a few people that might define it differently.
Okay.
What it is to me, what specialty coffee is to me, is a coffee chair that would be Arabica. Specifically to Arabica would be a higher version of the Arabica, or higher species within the Arabica tree, a Bourbon, a Tipica, a Pacamata, a Blue Mountain, something of some sort of a tree, but something that produces a great flavor that thrives at a high elevation in the mountain, grows very slowly at a higher elevation, and produces a great clean flavor.
Okay.
Very hard bean. It especially coffee is no different than wine. Mm-hmm. You know, you can produce grapefruit juice wine, or you can produce a fine Merlot. I mean, you can. There's either or. And specialty is the equivalent of the very high end wines, and that's what specialty coffee is to me. It's a fabulous tasting product. Mm-hmm. Appreciating the nuances.
Yeah. Now, talk a little bit about the SCAA, which is a Specialty Coffee Association of America, what that is, and then the role that they play kind of in the coffee industry and the coffee community as a whole.
The SCAA is actually, for many of you who haven't heard, I'm told, but it's called the Specialty Coffee Association of America. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to turn my phone off here because I have a feeling it's about to ring.
Jeff's a very busy guy. He gets phone calls from all around the world every minute or so. So
the Specialty Coffee Association is an organization that was set up to aid in the promotion and the education of people about specialty coffee, mm-hmm. and to expand the consumption of specialty coffee.
Right.
So the association has grown by leaps and bounds. Mm-hmm. And we ran into some difficulty a couple years ago. We hit a hard time, but this year we've officially recovered, mm-hmm. and the industry or the association is going full speed again, working on many projects from some great projects. For instance, this year we're the Roasters Guild, which is a guild of the Specialty Coffee Association of America, is going to launch the Coffee of the Year competition, mm-hmm. where they're encouraging producers. A roaster can actually enter a coffee as long as I did it in conjunction with a producer.
Right.
But you enter a coffee, not a company, but you enter the coffee, the green coffee, into a competition. It's roasted, and then they're going to have professional cuppers, evaluate these coffees from all over the world, mm-hmm. and they'll be selected in categories first. Like they'll have a dry process or a natural process coffee.
Okay.
They'll have a Central American washed competition. They'll have an African competition, mm-hmm. and then they're going to take the winners of all these different minor competitions.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to have them face off, and they're going to select the coffee of the year.
That's great.
That's good.
First time this has ever been done. It's going to be hosted at this year's SCAA conference in Minneapolis.
Okay.
So it's going to be a fabulous event. I think it's going to make world news.
Yeah.
So.
And that just goes to, I mean, that kind of reinforces my own thoughts about how, you know, the more and more I travel and the more I get to talk to, you know, people like Jeff, and it just seems like this is the most exciting time ever in the history of coffee since it, you know, came out of, you know, Ethiopia, you know, literally, was it 500-600 years ago, and we're living in a time where, you know, in our lifetime, we're going to see coffee go from, I don't know, you know, what it was that, you know, that freeze-dried crystal stuff to, you know, something that we can't even think about.
They are freeze-dried crystals anyway. What the heck?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
It's what? Punishment.
Well, you mentioned Ethiopia. I actually had a gentleman here just before you showed up, mm-hmm. Named Haiti, mm-hmm. and he's from Ethiopia.
Mm-hmm.
And he actually lives, he used to help Royal Coffee with the importation of Ethiopian coffees. He's from Addis Ababa, mm-hmm. in Ethiopia, and he's now living in Kansas City.
Huh.
He's been living in Kansas City since, I guess, 1987.
Okay.
But now he's going to open a small coffee shop in Kansas City. We're going to help him in the project.
Yeah.
And then he's going to donate. Because he's trying, what he wants to do is he wants to roast his own coffee,
okay.
in the shop.
Okay.
So he wants to have a roaster and cafe, and he wants to, so he wants to control the margin of coffee all the way through the process,
okay.
so that he can actually give a bigger share of the profits or of any money he makes back to farmers in Ethiopia.
Huh.
And so, yes, this is, getting back to your question,
yeah.
this is an incredibly exciting time in the industry, man. I was telling you earlier, it's like I have the best job on earth. I absolutely love what I do. I mean, I get up every day and I drive my fiance crazy because I can't wait to come to work every day, man. I love coffee. I love the people that are in coffee. We're all a bunch of nerds,
yeah.
you know, but we actually love what we do.
Yeah.
And there's so many great changes going on and experiments going on with coffee to improve the flavor.
Yeah.
And I honestly believe in the next 10 years, you'll see coffee being sold by the origin, by the farm, by the region in the country from where it's grown. It'll be known by the name, you know.
Yeah.
It'll be a Colombian Huila, El Palacio.
Yeah.
That's what it'll be, you know. And people will begin to look for those certain origins, much like wine is sold today.
Yeah.
And with the invitation of the clover, yeah. are you familiar with the clover?
Yeah.
Brew by the cup.
Can you explain the clover for people who are
you
listening
bet.
Haven't heard of it?
You bet. The clover is a new brewer. It's a commercial grade brewer. It costs about the same as an espresso machine. It's very expensive.
Yeah.
But it brews coffee by the cup. And it brews it in very much the drip French press style method. But it does it by the cup, and it does it mechanically, so it's perfect every time. You can dial in all the parameters to get different flavor profiles, and it's just it's a fantastic piece of equipment for a cafe that truly wants to focus on the finer elements of specialty coffee.
Yeah.
And introducing the flavor profiles to their customers.
Yeah.
For instance, we introduced Panama Esmeralda at $4 a cup for an 8-ounce cup or 12-ounce cup, and I can't believe how many of our customers in Topeka, Kansas are buying it on a daily basis now.
Wow.
That we've been carrying Esmeralda for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been able to share it with my customers because it was so expensive. I couldn't afford to just brew a pot of it
right.
and sell it for a dollar a cup. I would have lost money.
Yeah.
You can't afford to. So
right.
you only sold it by the bag, right? For $50 a pound is basically the way it sold.
Right. Yeah.
Well, now I can brew it by the cup and sell it for $4 and actually break even or make a little bit of money on it by the cup.
Right.
And better yet, introduce it to my customers.
Yeah.
So that they don't have to buy a whole bag of it to try it.
Right.
They can now try it by the cup for $4 instead of spending $50.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, because just to give you an idea how much of a breakthrough this kind of thing is, every year they have a national conference, and this past year was in Long Beach, and they give what they call Invention of the Year or Coffee Product of the Year award,
yeah.
And I think that the Clover Company has won it 2 years running now, and I think that Clover machine, which they're out of Seattle, if I remember correctly, actually won out of all the products entered. They won the best new thing. And actually, if you go out, I'm not being paid to plug anything.
Yeah,
we're just talking about this because we love coffee.
Are you being paid, period?
No, not at all.
What is that?
Only by the circus, and that's
yeah.
to play trumpet. So if you go to the Clover website, they actually have a map of all the Clover machines in the world. So if you want to find...
Just logging on right now.
Yeah, we're looking at it with the wonders of technology. Of course, all you are listening to this, via podcast, wherever you're at in the world. But so you may be jogging right now while you're listening to this. But when you get back to your computer, go Google Clover, and it'll come up, and you can find a map where all the Clover machines in the world are.
We also have a Clover, a picture of a Clover on our website.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Our website. You can go to that and look at equipment, and a Clover will be the first thing you'll see.
Yeah.
Right now, I'm actually taking you to something that's called CloverNet, and you actually have to have a Clover in order to get this. But this is, and it was actually down earlier today, so when I show you this, it probably will be down and defeat the purpose. But
okay. We can pretend it's working.
We'll pretend it's working if it's not. Basically, what this is connected through modems, and I don't know how technology works. You know better than I do. But basically, this is the internet's connected to my Clover. So every time we brew a cup of coffee, it transmits, and I know exactly what I've brewed on any given day.
Really?
That's Panama Esmeralda. I sold three cups of Panama Esmeralda yesterday. We sold four cups of Ethiopian Ariche, number 7, selection 7, and 2 cups of Aida's Grand Reserve, which is a peaberry coffee from El Salvador. It's excellent.
Okay. So. Wow. Yeah. This is amazing. I'm looking at a screen right now, and he's logging on to your cafe is here in Topeka, correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah. And he can log on from his desk here at the roastery and check out exactly what his machine did. And I guess the machine's hooked up to the internet. Is that correct?
It's hooked up to our modem. Would that be right? Or
you need to get a Clover cam. That's the next
step. Clover cam. Now we're talking. We're going to hook up a Clover cam. That's how they. You're right. Clover has won best new product at the SCA trade show 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
The first year they won with the Clover itself.
Uh-huh.
The second year they won with CloverNet. And CloverNet is what tracks.
Okay.
It actually tracks the drinks. I can enter the formula right here. If I can figure out how to get out of here. I can enter the formula by going to Coffee Lists. I can call up Sumatra Blue Batak, which is not active right now.
Uh-huh.
I can go on here, and I can change the time it brews.
That's amazing.
So I can change it to 41 seconds to 44 seconds, and that will change the flavor profile.
Yeah.
And then as soon as I activate that coffee by dragging it over to this column right here, that immediately shows up on the Clover in my store.
That's amazing.
So I can change the brew cycle of my coffees.
Yeah.
From anywhere in the world.
And just so you guys listening understand, it's every coffee has its own.
Yeah.
I mean, coffee has a general brewing parameter. I mean, hot water generally between, was it like 195 or 203, somewhere in there. And then you have a time Generally on a French press, it's, you know, around 4 minutes. Now with the clover, it uses a combination, for what I understand, is a French press and a vac pot.
Right.
So it's a much shorter time. And so each coffee has kind of like a sweet spot per se, you know, almost like a baseball bat has a sweet spot to hit that home
exactly
run.
Right.
All the coffees are the same kind of way. And so he is saying that he can control that from his desktop anywhere in the world. And so if someone, you know, that's, you know, brewing at Origin said, hey, this year's crop is, you know, a couple seconds shorter on the brew cycle and you've got it. And sweet, he can go into his computer, enter that in, and, you know, thousands of miles away back in Topeka, his clover machine will reflect that. And,
exactly,
you know,
right,
his barista is pulling the coffee cups will,
yeah,
you know.
It's amazing. I mean, with technology, I guess I can't say that I actually I would want to change the brew profile if I'm in Costa Rica. I'm not sure I would want to change a brew file on a brew profile on a coffee back in Topeka,
right,
unless I could be there to taste it to make sure it was accurate.
Yeah.
But I could if I wanted to. That's what matters. So, but it's also a lot of fun. I mean, it tracks the number of brews we do on a daily basis, so I can tell if the machine's being cleaned properly. It's a good piece of equipment.
Yeah.
Very expensive, but a good piece of equipment.
Yeah.
It's not exactly the type of thing you're going to have at your home.
Yeah.
But if you can find a cafe that has it, you should go visit them.
Yeah, I've tasted a couple cups, various origins on clovers around the U.S. And trust me, it's like a cup of coffee, but better.
Yeah, a cup of coffee on crack.
Yeah, it's
better.
Yeah, it's really good. And this is just really, you know, all the stuff that we're talking about is just the tip of the iceberg, I think, for what is to come. Like we said, it really is an exciting time. And you know, just sitting here talking about all this with you, Jeff, has been thrilling. So I want to thank you again for taking the time out of your your very busy schedule to sit down and with the podcast and talk about all this stuff. It's been great.
It's my pleasure. If any of your listeners aren't familiar with the Specialty Coffee Association,
mm-hmm,
I would encourage you to look them up online. It's called SCAA.org.
Mm-hmm.
SCAA.org, Specialty Coffee Association of America. It's a great organization. They're doing a lot of good to promote specialty coffee.
Yeah. A lot of good information on the website, too.
A lot of great information on the website.
Yeah.
And don't forget to visit ptscoffee.com.
Of course, yeah. Yeah, and if people actually want to get involved, you know, with the SCAA, there is a – I think you can become a – what's it called? A type of member, right?
Consumer member, yeah. Actually, the SCA is real focused in the next coming 2 or 3 years. And I say that because I'm on the board of directors and there's 2 or 3 of us on the board of directors who have decided this is what we want to focus on.
Uh-huh.
If we can get the rest of the board to agree with us, that's a whole different story. But our focus is really going to be on helping retailers in the coffee industry, which goes directly to the consumer.
Right.
The association is a big umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
The association is there for green coffee growers. I mean, it's there for people who grow coffee for farmers.
Right.
So the association has to be involved in the technology at the farm level,
mm-hmm,
and things and water, simple things as water and clothing and food. But the association is also involved with helping retailers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got a big umbrella we have to do. And we feel the association has drifted a long way towards the farm,
mm-hmm,
in the past 5 years, which is an absolute positive thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if many of you know, but 5 years ago, coffee was at the lowest price in history. Green coffee was selling for 50 cents a pound, and which was below the price farmers could live on. I mean, they could lose money by growing coffee. So the fact it's been focused over there has been good, but we want to bring it back now and focus on the retailers,
yeah,
to help all those independent coffee houses in the United States compete against the big green guys.
Hmm.
So
yeah, that's great. Wow. So much to digest, but you guys out there listening, that's the wonder of podcasting. You can go back and listen to it over and over again, and you know, you can listen around the fireplace or whatever you do. Listen to podcast. So, well, thanks again, Jeff, and I wish you the best of luck in all your future coffee.
Best mocha latte you've ever had?
This is very tasty, yeah.
So,
all right, thank you.
Thanks, man.
Welcome back. So I hope you enjoyed that. That was a lot of fun. Now, that latte at the end, he actually said mocha latte. It was just a plain latte. That's why I sounded like I was, I don't know. It sounded
odd. You know, I was like, he said mocha latte, and I didn't think quick enough to say, it's just a latte. But it was tasty. It was a tasty latte. Beautiful, beautiful latte art on there too, courtesy of Robin. So, which, speaking of Robin, he's going to be coming up in future weeks. I got to sit down with him and Holly there of PT's Coffee and do an interview with them as well. So that's going to be coming up in up and coming weeks. So yeah, interviews. I have lots of interviews. Interviews. A lot. I have a whole hard drive, a newly restored hard drive of loaded with interviews ready to go for upcoming podcasts that I'm really, really excited about. So you guys are in for a treat these next couple weeks. And so just some of the interviews I have, when I was in Spokane, got to sit down with two foodie friends of mine. So that's going to be fun. When I was in Seattle, got to do an interview there. Did a mocha latte tasting and sat down with Ray from Cafe Vita there. Also an interview with tour guides from Rick Steves, Europe Through the Back Door. That's a if you haven't heard of Rick Steves, Google him. And I'm going to be doing an interview with two guys from his company there that have traveled the world around and talk about coffee. So really good stuff. And yeah, all kinds of locations too, not just interviews. I did a little thing when I went up to the Grand Canyon, took the microphone along with me and some stuff on the bike. And then there's also that coffee bet that I made with my dad. That's coming up. And Seattle. I did a couple on-location things in Seattle. So, yeah, just a lot of exciting stuff to look forward to that I have planned. And I even have some other things in the works, which I'm not going to mention because, you know, in case they fall through. But some really exciting things on the horizon that I've been working on and collaborating with a couple other people. So, yeah, really exciting stuff for search for the best mocha latte in the world right now. Really good stuff. So yeah, and before I end the podcast this week, I'm not going to do any cafe reviews because I'm behind on getting those up on the web, so I'll save those for next week. So yeah, I'll skip those for this week. But before I sign off for this episode, I want to say send shout outs to first off Mark at Cafe Lux in LA. Awesome mocha. And he made me, they serve only ristretto shots of espresso. I have to say, the shot he made for me was probably, if not the best I've ever had in my life, probably in the top two or three. I mean, it was amazing there. So he's the owner there at Cafe Lux. So I want to send a shout out to him. Also, Joe out at No Brow in Salt Lake City. I got to chat coffee with him a little bit when I was going through Salt Lake. And Lori from CocoJava.com, she left a nice comment on the webpage and featured Search for the Best Mocha Latte in the World on her homepage. We were featured there for I think it was a week or two. So, yeah, go check out her webpage at CocoJava.com. Also, Greg, he commented as well at, any of you listening can make comments. If you go to www.bestmochalatte.podomatic.com, you can leave comments about any episode on there. It'd be great to hear from you. Or you can even send an email to bestmochalatte@gmail.com. You can also send an email there as well. So, yeah, good stuff. And also Adam of Silver Cup Coffee in Seattle. I will definitely be back in Seattle. And I'll be visiting Silver Cup Coffee when I'm back there this time around. And last but not least, Rob of Blueberry at Blueberry Network. Rob left a nice comment over there. And this podcast is on multiple different sites, but I want to send a special thank you to the Blueberry Network for letting the podcast be part of it there. You can find them at Blueberry, which is BLUBRRY.com. And there's no E in Blueberry because there's no E in fruit. That's their motto. So, yeah, good stuff. All right. So that about wraps it up for this week. Next week's episode, we're going to be go flying in the Flying Dutchman. I actually recorded while I was driving through Texas. Good stuff. And then I'm going to have the coffee bet with my dad. We actually went to the farmer's market in Lebanon, and I took the microphone with us. So you hear people talking about pretzels and selling things. So yeah, it's going to be good. And and then upcoming towns, just to kind of give you a preview, if you want to come see the circus, or want to even come out and say hello to me at Circus Coffee or at the show, we're going to be in Lincoln, Nebraska, and then I think I'll probably be stopping through Kansas City, Missouri. Then we play, Rockford, Illinois. I think I might be making a trip to Chicago that week if I get the bike back in time. And then we're in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and Dayton, Ohio. And then after that, we go down to Florida for winter quarters. So, that's kind of my schedule where I'll be. And I'll be tasting coffee all along the way and doing interviews and talking with people. So really, really good stuff, exciting stuff. Yeah, I'm excited. I always like, talking to podcast listeners. So I don't know, maybe I'm what's the right word? They always say people look different than their voice sounds. So maybe I'm scary in person for what my voice sounds like. I don't know. Whatever. I don't care. I can't change my appearance. No Botox for me. Never. Yeah. That stuff freezes, when you get it. Well, never mind. So anyways, that wraps it up for this week. I'm going to leave you with a song from Mod Dog. This is one of my favorites from all the episodes we've done. It's called Orient Express. So enjoy. And until next week, drink what you like and like what you drink. Take care. Bye.
ถึงสำ